never get stuck with others. He explains how every time we get stuck with others, it is because we are focused on solutions. He goes on to explain that if we will get off of defending our solutions and instead focus on the underlying problem and objectives and needs that our solutions are supposed to take care of, we will always get unstuck and move on. Not a bad guarantee to have, how never to get stuck with others. Listen as he describes this principle.
The third principle is understand them, don't beat them. This is an extremely important principle. It's important because, as Tom says, it will give you a guarantee about how never to get stuck with others. And it really refers back to the core concept that we began this series with, and that is the difference between understanding versus being right. This principle helps us focus on what happens when we get into trying to be right and how that gets us stuck with others, and how when we're able to try to understand, it always moves us on to some resolution. If we will refer to your handout, handout number 15, it gives you a diagram that on the left hand, on one hand, we have problems, needs, interests, values, principles, concerns. And on the other hand, what we do when we have these situations is that we tend to try to figure out some solution or answer to them. Our tendency is to jump to a solution that we see as the best answer. And then we tend to adopt a position to defend our solution. Our adopting a position, though, causes other people to adopt opposing positions. And what happens then is that we get stuck. We get blocked over who has the right solution, who has the best answer. And what oftentimes happens is that we end up arguing over something that nobody remembers what the original issue is, or nobody has taken the time to really understand the problem, nor do we understand what the problem means to each of the parties involved, that somehow our solution becomes equated with our worth and value, and we start arguing over who's right, and nobody even knows or ever knew or remembers, at any rate, what the real problem is or what the objectives are. This is a very common phenomenon for rebel producers, because rebel producers tend to be impatient and tend to jump to solutions, and they tend to want it their way. So again, while this principle applies to any negotiations, we will particularly encounter this type of situation when we're dealing with people in rebel producer thinking. So the principle is that we need to not get stuck on solutions, that I need to never get pitted with other people. Anytime I find myself in an opposing position with someone else about who has the right answer, I never want to argue that. I always want to step outside the box. I want to step aside and I want to go back and refocus on what the underlying problem was and spend the time trying to define and analyze and really understand what the situation is. I need to gather my data to make sure we both have all the facts. I need to clarify what the interpretation of the facts are on both sides, what they mean to me and what they mean to the other person, how they're interpreting them and how I'm interpreting them. Because unless we both have the same data, and unless we spend the time to understand how we're both looking at that data, unless we can come to some common agreement about what reality is, what's in the sandbox, unless you and I can agree upon that, we have no place else to go together. We're stuck. So it becomes critical that we be willing to go back and really understand what the problem is, to gather all of our data, to understand our thinking, to get clear about the kind of results that we're getting now so we know how important the problem is to us, and that we're clear about what the needs are of all the parties involved, both their personal needs, again, and the organizational needs that they represent. If we'll spend the time to really try to understand the problem, with the other parties, rather than argue over our solutions, we will always move on to the next step. Arguing over solutions is what we do when we want to be right. understanding what the problem is and what it means to each of the parties involved. That's being in a posture of understanding. That's what moves us on to the next step. When you think about it, it's really a kind of foolish thing to jump to solutions. Our objective in any negotiation is to create as many options as we can for ourselves. The more options I have, the more likely it is I'm going to come up with a better solution. But when we jump to one solution and defend it, we've eliminated all of our other options. We're now limited. We have limited ourselves, usually, to only one option. Whereas if I will engage in the process with others of trying to fully understand the problem of getting all of our data and understanding what that data means, inevitably what happens is that we create multiple options. We see ways of doing it that we hadn't seen before. Inevitably, there are ways that I can do it with others and we can both walk away satisfied. Now, those of you in Rebel Producer Thinking who are sitting there listening to me say this are saying that you don't think that's true. I challenge you to explore the possibility that you can create options with others, that you have time to do that, that you can find solutions that will meet both of your needs. This principle is a way to help us move through and resolve what appear to be seemingly impossible blocks oftentimes. One of the clients that I've worked with recently have been in conflict over whether or not to have a board. The president of the company is a classic rebel producer, and he wants to do it himself. He says things like, I don't want it to be restricted and limited. I don't want anybody telling me how to run the company. I don't want anybody telling me what I can do with my senior managers. I don't want anybody to have the authority to fire me. But the fact is, he doesn't own all the company. He only owns a part of the company. And on the other side, so they've been deadlocked over this issue of the board. And the other side says, but we don't trust you. We don't always trust what you've done financially. We feel like the company is at risk. Its financial ratios are way out there beyond what the banks will accept. We're not willing to have you put our investment at this kind of risk. So it seemed like an impossible situation, you know, to have a board, not to have a board. And they had argued about it. They had fought about it. They had refused to talk to each other about it. The president of the company had simply said, I'm not going to do it. You can't make me do it. Seemed like a real block. So the solution that they were talking about was to have a board, not to have a board. And I proposed to them that they try to get off the solution and talk about what that board was supposed to do for them. What did the board mean? What was that a solution to? If they had a board or didn't have a board, what would that provide for them? And the result is that we brainstormed a whole list of issues. Issues around balance management, issues about unresolved events that had happened in their relationships in the past, issues about what they needed to do to recruit and maintain really strong key managers throughout the organization, issues about what they needed to do to maintain good relationships with the financial community. There was a whole host of issues that they needed to talk through. And as we began to talk through those issues one by one and get them resolved, what became clear to them was that a board wasn't an all or nothing issue, that boards have different degrees of authority, and that they needed to be able to define what the different levels of decision-making authority were for that board in specific situations. And as they did that, they found, as they did that, and as they resolved some of their historic relationship issues with each other, they found that they really were not in conflict, that they came to some common agreement about not only to have a board, but precisely what that board would do and the role that it would play in the management of the company. It's an example of where they got off their single solutions, to have a board, not to have a board, and went back and tried to understand respectfully what the needs were of each of the parties involved and what the needs were of the organization, and work through to try to understand those issues together, that they came up with a solution that in fact satisfied all their needs. Another example of this is a company I've worked with in the Midwest that had a history of union management conflicts, and they were ready to go out and strike. And it was one of many strikes they've had in recent years. And this time the strike was over seniority. The union wanted to maintain plant-wide seniority, and the management wanted to have group seniority because they had divided their production up by product lines, and they wanted more flexibility. They wanted to be able to move people around. The company wanted to be able to move people around to different positions without having the bumping process of every time they moved someone, everybody with seniority could bump into position, so that instead of changing two people, they ended up changing sometimes 20 or 30 people. That was very costly for them as a company and resulted in a cost because of new training that was needed, because people didn't know the jobs, because of errors that were made and so forth. And the union was afraid that if they did not have plant-wide seniority, that it threatened their members in terms of their financial security. So they were ready to go out on strike. They were stuck. So what were the positions? What was the solution? Well, to have group seniority or plant-wide seniority. So as I sat down with each of the sides, I focused them back on the left-hand column and said, so tell me what your needs are. Tell me what this solution provides for you. And I had each side brainstorm what the list of needs and objectives were that they had around this issue of seniority. And there were many. But they all had to do with the issue of profitability or financial security, whichever side of that coin you looked at. So as I sat down with them together then, I said, suppose we identify all the issues and needs around your profitability and around your financial security on both sides. And let's see what those issues are and see if we can't find solutions to those issues. See if there aren't solutions that will meet both your needs. So we looked at issues of training. We looked at issues of better hiring practices. We looked at issues of how to improve some of the operating systems. We looked at issues of better maintenance of equipment. We looked at issues of automation. We looked at issues of retirement benefits. We looked at a host of issues. And we worked through satisfactory agreements about what the organization needed and what the employees needed. And as is typically the case, by the time we addressed all those real specific needs that existed, seniority didn't seem like a very important issue. Seniority had been a solution that had been used for a long time that really wasn't meeting the needs of either side. That there were specific things that needed to be addressed. There were multiple solutions that were needed. Seniority was only one solution, and it wasn't a very good one at that. Sometimes we also find this issue coming up in our families. There are many examples that I had having had four teenage boys at the same time of curfews and rights and privileges. And I learned early on that to argue about curfew was to argue about the wrong thing. That what we needed to talk about was what one of my sons needed to be doing between midnight and 3 a.m. and what I needed to be doing between midnight and 3 a.m. And when we talked about those real issues, those real needs, and could listen to and respect those on both sides, then we always found ways of taking care of those needs, ways in which curfew was not a good solution. But that's what we'd spend time arguing about. I have an example of that goes back years for me with my oldest son, who, when I bought him his first bicycle, he was 5, and I had made the rule that he could not ride his bicycle across one particular busy street because he didn't ride very good, and I was afraid, and he fell over a lot. I was afraid he was going to fall in front of a car. So I would come home from work, and there would be Andy on the other side of the street riding his bike with other kids in the neighborhood in the school playground. And so not being not being very secure in myself as a father in my 20s and needing to prove my authority, I would haul him home and ground him and put the bike in the garage and say, "You're not going to ride your bike. You know, you haven't respected my authority on this." So the battle went on for several days where I'd come home and I'd find him over there riding his bike again. And pretty soon his mother got tired of being the referee of the bicycle and said, "Look, get this straightened out. I don't want to put up with this anymore." So I hauled Andy out on the front porch and I beat him up in all the ways that I could effectively beat him up when I was in my late 20s. Said things like, "Andy, I'm really disappointed in you after all the money I spent in your bicycle that you intentionally disregard my authority and continue," and he interrupts me. And he says, "Well, it's no fun riding my bicycle by myself." So what he did was get off the solution being you can or cannot ride your bicycle across this particular street. And instead, he gave me a clear statement of his needs. It's no fun to ride his bicycle by himself. Well, my 28, 29-year-old wisdom, I was able to hear that. And I said, "Yeah, that makes sense to me. I didn't buy you the bicycle so you'd be ostracized from all the other kids in the neighborhood. And can you understand that I'm afraid you're going to get hit by a car? I'm afraid you'll fall out in front of a car." At that point, we had taken the time to state, to name, and to hear each other's needs. Because Andy then was able to move on to a new solution. He said, "So why can't I push the school crosswalk light, and when the light changes, walk my bike across the other side and then ride it on the other side?" And I said, "Well, that'd be fine. That takes care of both of our needs." There was silence for a couple of moments, and he said, "So that's what I've been doing all this time." So he won that one. And it still makes the point. The point is that when we were able to take the time to listen to each other's needs and to respect them, I was able to hear the wisdom of a 5-year-old to know that he had already figured out a solution that worked, even though I hadn't figured it out yet. Kids have a nice way of kind of pulling us up by our suspenders sometimes. Another example of this principle is not so long ago in our office, we were working on a new brochure, a new marketing piece, and we got down to the final stages before it was going to be sent off to the printers, and we found three of us in an argument about what the colors were going to be, and two of us wanted it to be black and white and red, and the other person wanted it to be teal and taupe, and so we were stuck on what the colors would be, till finally, Marcia was able to say, "Let's step back and not argue about what color it needs to be. Let's focus on what are we trying to achieve with this brochure? You know, what are our objectives here?" And as we were able to brainstorm those and articulate those with each other about what we wanted the brochure to accomplish for us and how we wanted people to be able to read through it and what the message was we wanted them to get and what we wanted it to feel like for people. When we were clear about what we wanted to achieve, we all looked at each other and it was obvious what we needed to do. There was no disagreement. That is my experience over and over again. It's my experience that when I'm willing to take the time to really understand with others what our objectives are, that we're willing to really look at our data, clarify our thinking with each other, look at the results we're getting now, look at the results that we want to get, when we're willing to do that, we always create new options that satisfy the needs of everyone. There is not a limitation of good solutions in the world. It is not a problem that we won't find solutions. There are plenty of solutions. In fact, solutions are free if I'll only take the time to do the analysis with others that I need to do. I guarantee you that if you will follow this principle, that you will never get stuck with another person, that you will always move on to the next step, that it will enable you to create more options and better options than you have thought of before. This principle is difficult for us oftentimes, especially difficult for us when we're in our rebel producer thinking. Again, it's difficult because it goes back to the core of what I've talked about in this series, that it requires that we be willing to get off of being right and to move into a posture of trying to understand. It's one of the ways that I know the difference inside myself. I know when I'm trying to be right, whenever I'm stuck with somebody else over who has the right answer, over what solution we should follow. And I know I'm in a posture of understanding when it feels like I and the other persons involved are on the same side of the table, trying to create more options together. Again, if you want to refer to your booklet, worksheet number 16 gives you a series of reflective questions to go through to allow you to apply this principle to some of your own real examples so that you can integrate it and make use of it in your own negotiations.
This is the end of tape 9.